Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner reminding you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union's banner lives. Now we are going to turn our attention to what's happening in Annapolis with two men who have been covering it for years and understand it intimately. Charles Robinson, a political commentator and Annapolis reporter for Maryland Public Television, and Brian Sears, government reporter for the Daily Record and a WPAL radio commentator, and here as well sometimes. Good to have you both with us.
Here. Thanks, Mark.
And you all can join us at 410-319-8888. You can send emails to talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, log on to our Facebook pages, but 410-319-8888. So an interesting time this session. I've really been following it. I know you guys have intensely. And let me get your sense about a story that happened the other week that I wonder how deeply Brian Sears' story is holding forth with people in Annapolis, and that's the question of these executive privilege emails that went out.
Yeah, I mean, it has not been something that has sort of caught fire just yet in the legislature. But there, you know, look, there are a number of bills already that are being circulated that deal this year with openness. There are a couple of groups, including the Maryland Delaware DC Press Association, that's working pretty hard on suggesting some changes for the public records and open meetings laws. This hasn't been something that's really caught the attention of a lot of legislators, but there are a number of the people in the press corps who are watching this because, you know, it always raises the concern when you're stamping every living document that comes through the door with a note that says that, you know, it's executive privilege and you can't hand it out to anyone. It always runs the risk there, Mark, that there are going to be things that legally the public should be entitled to see that they won't be able to see because of what the administration calls an abundance of caution.
And, Mark, this particular executive action comes via an opinion by one of the attorneys working for the Hogan administration. It's a trend that's been going on at governmental levels where people want to have conversations via email, and some of those have come back to bite people when they've been disclosed. And this was kind of, let's just put a blanket over everything, and we'll see where the chips may fall in case someone challenges us on this through a FOIA request, which is a Freedom of Information request by both groups and journalists who may want to look at, you know, what was the thinking behind any given, decision that the governor or his staff has made.
So, hey, Mark.
Yeah, Brian.
If you get down to brass tacks, I mean, everything that gets, if you file a request for a document or an email, these things are already routinely reviewed on multiple levels, including usually going through an attorney with whatever agency you're dealing with. For me as a working reporter and someone who cares about the public being able to have access to documents, the real concern here is that prior to any of this legal review, what you're doing is you're stamping it with a big red stamp at the top that says that this is executive privilege and it's not to be circulated. And so I worry about the idea that, you know, someone who is overworked within the bureaucracy takes a look at this when they get a request, and those documents never see an attorney and never get an actual review, and that there are documents that are pertinent to the public discussion that the public never sees but has a right to.
So I want to kind of probe some things while we have time together. Let's jump to the rain tax for a moment, because this was one of the big issues during the gubernatorial election. Some people think it was part of the reason that excited the voters that voted for Larry Hogan. And it seems to be coming a major battleground with the Senate President and House Speaker Bush on very different sides of this, and how this is going to play out. I'm curious what you think, how this is going to end. Let me start with Brian. We'll go right to Charles.
Well, you know, look, we saw yesterday that the Senate President introduced his own version of a bill to deal with the issue of the stormwater management fee, which the governor has pretty successfully branded publicly as the rain tax. Look, he's got the Senate president has 29 sponsors and himself on that bill. If any bill has got an opportunity of coming out of the Senate, it's probably going to be Mike Miller's bill. His bill does a little bit more than the governor's bill in terms of requiring counties to provide a report on how they're going to, to pay for these required remediations and pollution control efforts. I got to believe that's the bill that's going to have the steam, at least in the Senate. The real unknown here becomes what happens in the House, because there's not a tremendous will, I think, to do anything about the stormwater management fee.
Charles, and then it goes to the House. Very different leadership.
Well, part of this is, this was a pet project of the former head of the Environmental Committee, Maggie McIntosh, Delegate Maggie McIntosh. And she saw this as a way to stamp out, if you will, the environmentalists if the Hogan bill would go through. Let me just say that both of these bills are about semantics. And what I mean by that, one says, I want to get rid of the actual so-called fee or / mandate. And you can pick your poison. And, Brian and I both went to a press conference, and then we heard from the good president of the Senate's aide, basically trying to explain, well, it's not what he actually said. And what we heard is that, we want to get rid of the mandate from both the Senate president, and we heard the same thing from the governor. And then when we came back, but he kind of couched it in terms that we don't like it, but we're going to do it. And I don't know about you, Brian, didn't you find that just kind of like strange that, they were saying the same thing, but they didn't want to say the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of respects, they are saying the same thing. And I will tell you that one of the things that has been going on very early on, Mark, is that the governor and the Senate president have been pretty clearly on the same page in terms of what they want to do initially with the stormwater management fee, and the fact that they both want to remove what they believe is a mandate. And I'll point this out. There seems to be some debate about whether or not there really is a mandate at this point, because you do have a number of counties like Frederick County who charges a penny for everybody.
Right.
And Carroll County doesn't charge anyone. Harford County eliminated theirs earlier this year. So the idea that there's actually a mandate now seems to be I think is open to debate. So really, in the end, this idea that by removing the language from the law, you're giving counties flexibility to do something. There are people who would argue that the counties already have the flexibility, and some of them are actively using it.
So I there seems to be a number of bills there's one bill in particular we're going to be discussing in the next hour that's affecting Baltimore City directly. I'm going to ask you all about, which has to do with policemen having the right to carry guns, city school police having the right to carry guns in schools. That's been introduced by Senator Conway from Baltimore and by Delegate Anderson from Baltimore. Is that going to, where is that? And how deep is that, and how much do you think it will fly? Charles?
Well, we've already had a rally to get people to consider this idea. I hate to say it, I call it a slippery slope. In other words, if you allow police to have guns in Baltimore City schools, let me tell you that every jurisdiction in the state is going to ask for the same thing. Do you want that to happen? I can hear folks from the Maryland NRA saying, yay, let's do this. And then, of course, all we need is one incident where someone either fires a gun within a school, and let's say, for instance, they don't hit the right person. I can tell you that if you thought the Trayvon Martin thing was big, you're opening up a real can of worms here if that happens. And the other part of that is, do you kind of resolve those folks who do carry guns of liability if they do this? This is going to be one of those kind of, damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Brian?
Mark, look, for me, first of all, I mean, in this bill, I believe we're talking about officers who are, in effect, in every other sense of the word, police officers. They go through police officer training, and the only thing that they don't have are sidearms. All you have to do is drive across the line into Baltimore County and go to just about any middle school or high school in Baltimore County. Mm-hmm. They've had SROs there for years. Those SROs are point blank. They are Baltimore County police officers assigned to those schools who carry weapons. They're in the schools every day. I think you do have my recollection, and I'm trying to check this on the fly here while we're talking, but my recollection is that John Cluster, Republican from
yes.
Baltimore County,
right.
has a bill in this year that would require those school resource officers in all primary and secondary schools. I think that's House Bill 28. This is the second or third year he's had that bill in. How far this bill goes, I mean, is anybody's guess at this point. I mean, Cluster's bill has had tough sledding in committee, and I got to believe that that Anderson's bill probably will as well. We've seen odd things happen and bills come out of committee that you didn't think would come out of committee. So, until the bill's dead, it's not dead.
So I know it's not dead, and I'm just curious. Real quick aside to ask this question, Brian, because what you said about Baltimore County and SROs, the student resource officers. So do Baltimore County police officers, are they assigned to individual schools that they patrol all day long, or just schools that are inside that they might walk in and out of because they're in their particular patrol district?
No, I mean, look, these officers, for the most part, are in these schools. They are there. They are there on a daily basis. They're walking the halls. They're talking to students. The whole point of the program, as I understand it, and from my years of covering Baltimore County, is that, they want the officers in those schools so that they understand, what's normal for those schools, and the students know who they are, and it gives an opportunity for the students and the SRO to develop relationships and to be able to hear what's going on.
We're going to be debating this in the next hour, but let me ask this other thing. Yesterday we had conversations with people about bills that are being considered in committee now to take things like marijuana and sodomy charges off of people's records. There's a lot of bills to kind of reform what happens to people who've been arrested and been charged with charged of crimes and not convicted, but that remains on their record, and other issues like that are going to be battled in the Judiciary Committee, and bills being introduced by Jamie Raskin and others. So, Charles, let me start with you and go to Brian on this one. What's the status of these things? Are they going to get through? What's the sense? Is there a serious debate going on? Serious consideration? What's happening?
There's a rally today in Annapolis regarding this particular issue, and part of it is this whole idea that folks who have won served time or who have had, incidents with police, that this doesn't allow them to get gainfully employed. There is a sentiment within the legislature amongst a number of delegates and senators that this needs to go by the wayside. And I'll put this in the context of the heroin press conference that we had the other day. One of the ideas that the governor has proposed with that is to give help to folks who have had drug addictions and to get them back into society. So it's becoming, the old adage of lock them up and send them away. I don't want to say it's sliding away, but it is being diminished because folks are seeing that it costs a lot of money to keep people both locked up and keep them out of being gainfully employed. And those are taxpayers. And I think what you're going to hear a lot in the testimony is that you're going to hear from people who have tried to go beyond this and to kind of get people back into society. Because right now, if you look at Baltimore City, that Baltimore City has the largest ex-offender population in the state. And those folks can't get regular jobs because they have these records.
And where do you see it going, Brian? These several bills that are taking place right now.
Yeah, there are a number of competing bills. For example, Senator Joan Carter Conway from Baltimore City has a bill in that would essentially allow people to have crimes expunged, everything below sort of the major felonies like rape and some serious assault and murder. I think that's going to have some pretty tough sledding. The Second Chance Act is still in play. I think that, you know, that has had tough sledding over the last couple of years. One bill that did come out that got voted out late last night in the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee is a bill that was sponsored by Senator Anthony Muse that allows for the expungement of crimes that are no longer crimes. And it doesn't take you much to figure out pretty quickly that one of the big things that will almost immediately erase if this becomes law is everybody who got convicted of what is now de minimis possession of marijuana. It would allow people to basically go back and have those very, you know, those under 10 gram possession charges wiped off of their records. That got passed out of committee. It's got to come out of the Senate. It's got to work its way through the House. I think it's probably going to be tough to get through a Delegate Joe Valerio's committee.
Uh-huh.
But you know, there's a possibility, but that one could have some pretty broad effects on criminal records.
And that includes the people who have been arrested and convicted of sodomy and acts like that as well.
Well,
in the bill.
It only affects people who were convicted of crimes that are no and these
right.
and these crimes they were convicted of are no longer crimes.
So it'll be interesting to follow these. We're going to be doing some of the coverage here on the show, just covering some of what's going on in both judiciary committees to see where these things go, and they're both very different. Very quickly, to end up, I guess, with talking about this, that one of the major kind of, I don't know, it's not an emotional push, but just a major push that out of Hogan's office around this heroin commission and these bills coming in to give people lengthy sentences who sell heroin that might lead to the death of another human being. Where are those going?
Look, I think my understanding is that the bill to give these lengthy sentences, that one's going to have a long way to go. That may be a work in progress and not for this year. I think you can say that there's some emotion tied to this. We were, during the governor's press conference on this, he became visibly choked up on a number of occasions. He talked about the loss of a cousin to a heroin overdose. It was clear that, you know, that this was something that was raw for him. I think right now, you know, what we have is that we have a bunch of competing efforts. You have the attorney general with his effort. You have the legislature and the governor both essentially with task forces and some small bandages to try and do something. And you know, we're putting more anti-overdose drugs on the street, but that's a limited number. And really what we're looking at is if these task forces get done, maybe not recommendations until December. And that could put off, you know, till this time next year before we actually have any legislation that could do something in a meaningful way.
And Charles, your final thoughts on this?
Well, first and foremost, you know, they didn't have any answers, and they're going to be doing a lot of data collection. So their first stop is going to be up in Cecil County in mid-March. And they say they're going to be doing listening sessions. The bigger problem I see, Mark, and you know you have seen the evolution of heroin and its effects on our society, is that, you know, it didn't become an issue until it moved into suburban communities where folk who are a little bit more well-to-do go, oh, God, we got a problem. The biggest issue that I see is that there are not enough treatment slots / beds available for people who want treatment. And I just left a treatment center yesterday, and it's a private one, and it costs $3,400. Now, I don't want to tell you that
a month. Right.
A junkie doesn't have $3,400. And you got to figure out a way either how to pay for it or to get people into treatment centers.
Well, it's always great to have the two of you on and both your perspectives. And I look forward to this continuing conversation. Well, I'll see you in Annapolis, see you here in the studio, see you on the airwaves. Charles Robinson, who is the Annapolis reporter for MPT, and Brian Sears, government reporter for the Maryland Daily Record. Charles and Brian, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Have a good day there. We're going to take a very brief break. And on our way to break here on the Mark Steiner Show, you're hearing Norwegian Wood by the Beatles. On this day in 1966, Rubber Soul by the Beatles hit number one. We'll be right back as we look at the question of should police officers carry guns in Baltimore City schools. Stay with us.
Oh, should I say she wants that me?